Who remembers something from yesterday's class? Raise your hand if you actually remember something from yesterday's class. I didn't say beep if you remember. What is that beeping mechanism? Is that yours? How do you know how to beep like that? Is that, what is that? Okay. I was about to ask, where is Bhuvaneshwar? But I already know Bhuvaneshwar is in Orissa. They're so intelligent. How did you get so effulgent today? How did you get so effulgent today? Could you please hold up your right and left hands again? No, like high, so we could see those gloves. Those are like the best gloves I've seen in a while.
What kind of socks are they?
I wonder if you have like bear socks or something. Yes. Who remembers something from yesterday's class? One. Yeah. Do you remember anything? You remember what book? Yes. Krishna book. And at the beginning of this chapter that we were reading, Aristasura came. And then immediately what happened after that? Then what happened? Then Narada Muni came. Take out the battery. That's what I would suggest. Huh? That we won't suggest. But if it's going to be beeping like that, I'll make beeping jokes the whole time. But, amazingly, Narada Muni, wishing to speed up the death of Kamsa, and knowing that Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes had reached their end, basically with the killing of Aristasura, it was basically the end of Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes, even though two more demons were yet to be killed. One was Aristasura's friend, whose name was Keshi. And then one last demon that actually Jiva Goswami says was killed early in the pastime. And his name was, that last demon, Vyomasura. Yes, thank you. But that will be in the next chapter. So Kamsa Narada Muni tells Kamsa that you've been cheated by Vasudev. And actually, that daughter who you tried to kill at her birth, who flew up into the sky and chastised you, and who had said that the child who is going to kill you has taken birth elsewhere, that daughter was born of Yashoda. And Vasudev, cheating you, had switched that son of his who was meant to kill you, whose name is Krishna, with that daughter, and that daughter was actually the daughter of Yashodamaya. And when Kamsa heard this, he became furious and he pulled out his sword to kill Vasudev, even though Vasudev was not present. Narada Muni stopped him, saying, if you kill Vasudev, then that child is going to know about it, and Nandamaraj will push him out of sight, and he will be hiding, and you will never find him until he comes to kill you. And anyway, it is not Vasudev who will kill you, it is Krishna. Then Narada Muni, after having finished his business of stirring things up, and moving the pastime along, he left. But he left, and in the next chapter, he's going to come again. But this time, in the next chapter, he's going to, like, talk to Krishna and tell him, now it is the time for you to leave Vrindavan. But that is in the next chapter. Now, after Kamsa hears from Narada how he's been treated by Vasudeva, he puts Vasudeva in prison, and then he begins his plot, his plan to have Krishna killed directly. And we read about the wrestling. He organized the wrestling, the wrestlers to come. Who knows the name of one of the wrestlers? Chanora, Mastika, Sal, Toshal. Any others? I also... Shala. Shala? Sala, Toshala, yes. I think those are the four that we know. Kuta, yes, yes. Very good. So, and then the elephant was going to be outside, whose name was Kuvalayapita, and the actual fight between Krishna and the elephant is very wonderful, because Krishna is such a young boy, and there's a great gate into the wrestling arena in Mathura, and the elephant is just at the gate where Krishna would have to enter, and the mahout, the has an ankush, means the goad, and he's taking the pointed spear part of the goad, and he's poking it into the elephant, because the elephant, his skin is so thick, so when the elephant is stuck by that ankush, he becomes very angry also, and then he's going to direct his anger against Krishna, and Krishna immediately asks him to move out of the way, and the elephant and the mahout, they won't let the elephant move, and Krishna says, if you do not move out of the way, you're going to be killed. And then the elephant tries to grab Krishna with his trunk, and Krishna very dexterously, very the elephant thought, oh yes, I read this in the words of Srila Jiva Goswami recently, that when the elephant was fighting with Krishna, and the elephant was trying to step on Krishna, grab him with his trunk, and what does the elephant do? He grabs something with the trunk and throws him to the ground and steps on him. So he was trying to do that with Krishna, and Krishna was moving this way and that way and moving out of the way very, very gracefully. And Srila Jiva Goswami describes the elephant, his thought while he's fighting with Krishna. He says that Krishna, this boy, he moves like a dancer but kills like a lion. His movements are so graceful. And he's there, and then he's moving very gracefully to the side, and the elephant tries to step on him, and Krishna goes between the legs of the elephant, and the elephant can't see, and he puts his trunk back to catch Krishna in his powerful trunk, because the elephant is known as what? What is in Hindi or Sanskrit? Hati, or that's Bengali. Hati. Hasti or something. So how do you say hand? Hat. So it's the same word, because the elephant's trunk is like his hand. Yes? Yes, I told you. So it's another hand. So he's named after that trunk. And his power is in his eyes are weak, so he can't find Krishna. And his power is in his sense of hearing and his sense of smell. So he's searching for Krishna. And Krishna moves to the ground, and like he falls down, and the elephant tries to stab him with his tusk, and Krishna gracefully just rolls out of the way. And the tusk gets stuck in the ground, and Krishna then jumps on the elephant. And then the tusk is in the ground, and he's stuck, and he throws the elephant over, he pulls out the tusk, and then he did that with the rest of Sorrento. He took the tusk, and he killed him like that. That was the elephant. And then he pulled out one tusk. Tusks are so valuable. He pulled out another tusk. And he was... does anyone know what season this all occurred in? I just read it recently. It was in the month of Magh. That's next month. In the Chaturdasi. I think it must be the... coming to the... Amavasya, the waning moon of the Chaturdasi. That's when they were planning on doing the Dhanurjagya, the bow sacrifice. And then on that day, Kamsa was killed. So Krishna took out one tusk, and some of the blood of the elephant was decorating him, and some perspiration from the fight. He put it on his shoulder, the tusk, and Balaram took the other tusk and put it on his shoulder. And in that way, they walked into the wrestling arena. Just looking so, because they had been decorated. They were wearing nice new cloth, because they took the washerman's cloth, and the weaver had fitted perfectly for them. And Kubja had decorated them so beautifully. And their beautiful flower garlands, and they had the tusks of their elephant on their shoulders, and they just walked into the wrestling arena and confronted Kamsa, and all the people saw them, so interestingly, and it's something that we all experience, all the people in the wrestling arena, including Kamsa and the wrestlers, they saw Krishna, not exactly as Krishna was, although one couldn't say that they didn't see him as he was, because he's all these things, but they saw him according to their own mentality. And we ourselves, at least I experience this all the time, and if I'm in a really good mood, everything is wonderful, and then if I'm in a bad mood, everything is terrible. The same things, the same occurrence, but according to my consciousness, I see one way or another. I can see the opposite one moment and completely the opposite the next moment, the same thing. So that's, we see according to our consciousness, not according to our eyes exactly. So one wrestler, the wrestlers saw Krishna as like a thunderbolt, so powerful, and Kamsa saw him as death personified. The king saw him as the greatest king. The women there saw him as the most beautiful lover. The coward boys saw them, Krishna, as a friend. So according to our consciousness, we perceive Krishna, but we perceive reality according to our consciousness. So therefore, if we actually want to see Krishna, we have to have a very special consciousness to actually perceive Krishna as he is, a very refined, very subtle spiritual consciousness. And the processes that we follow, and the restrictions that we follow, don't do this and do this, they're all meant to purify our consciousness, to have a subtle consciousness in goodness with bhakti. Goodness is the stepping off or the jumping off platform to spiritual life. And the first question I ever asked Srila Prabhupada was at 22nd Avenue. And Prabhupada had given a Sunday feast lecture. And he asked, and he was speaking about Prahlad Maharaj. And he said that Prahlad Maharaj was in the mode of goodness. A devotee, Prahlad Maharaj was in the mode of goodness. And I had already heard the philosophy for 2 months. I had heard Rupanuga Prabhu at the university speaking, so I was already knew everything. So when I heard Prabhupada say that, after he asked any questions, and I said, you said that devotees or Prahlad Maharaj was in the mode of goodness. I thought devotees are transcendental to the mode of goodness. Now, I didn't know what the mode of goodness was, really. I didn't know what transcendental meant, really. Huh? I didn't know what good was at all. Definitely had no idea. But I asked that question out of my theoretical arrogance. What does arrogance mean?
Self-conceitedness, to think that oneself very
high. Yes, that, pride. Yeah, unreasonably so. Yes, there's in the word arrogance. Is that? And then so Prabhupada answered, yes, devotees are transcendental, but generally they act in the mode of goodness. This is the, they're not limited by the mode of goodness, but we try to cultivate the mode of goodness. This is the basic teaching of the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. The basic lifestyle of the devotees is sattva-gun. And trying to avoid which other modes of nature? Yeah, passion, ignorance. So it's actually a very important point. So, because from sattva-gun, when the consciousness is purified and subtle and not controlled by all the symptoms of passion and the symptoms of ignorance and being so pushed around by the anger and by the desires and I want this and I don't want that, just our consciousness gets I would, if it was in Australia and India, it's like getting hit by a cricket bat all the time. Just getting knocked here and knocked there and knocked there. That's what happens when so we want to cultivate sattva guna and goodness. And then when there's bhakti, then one can see Krishna. And then when there's prema bhakti, premanjana charita bhakti valochanena shanta sadaiva vidyeshu valokayanti, then Prabhupada once called prema the magic wand that allows one, a magic wand can change everything. So prema changes our vision. Prema bhakti changes our vision to such a degree that one who has prema bhakti can see Krishna at every moment. At every moment. Krishna cannot run from his sight, because his consciousness is so much absorbed in thoughts of Krishna with such love. And then when one has love for Krishna in the same mood as the Brijbasis, then actually one can control Krishna. That's the first word of the that one actually brityavatsyataha. Atmano brityavatsyata. Krishna wants, he exhibits his childhood pastime so that to tell everyone that I can actually be controlled by my devotees, the devotion of my devotees. But it has to be real devotion, which is, as we say, the primary thing is the consciousness has to come to sattva, and then devotion can grow so much easier because one has detachment and one's consciousness is clear. So Krishna walked into the wrestling arena with Balaram, and Kamsa saw him as death. And it was accurate. What's the Bhagavad Gita verse? Yes, Mrityam Sava Harascham. For the materialist, even though the materialist turns his back on Krishna, he must see Krishna, but in the form of death. Unstoppable death. So this was Kamsa's plan, and he's going to move on with his plan. And now Srila Prabhupada in the Krishna book is going to describe something about the Dana Jagya. Krishna also advised his friends to arrange to worship Lord Shiva by offering animal sacrifices, goats, and performing the sacrifice called the Dana Jagya. and the sacrifice performed on the 14th day of the moon known as Chaturdasi. This date falls 3 days after Ekadasi, and it is set aside for the worship of Lord Shiva. One of the plenary portions, what does plenary mean? Prabhupada uses that word a lot, plenary portion. What does plenary mean? Complete. Like if you say there's a plenary session meeting, means a complete, all the committee members will be there, complete. One of the plenary portions of Lord Shiva is called Kalabhairav. This form of Lord Shiva is worshipped by demons who offer animals killed before him. The process is still current in India in a place called Baidyanath Dham, where demons offer animal sacrifice to the deity of Kalabhairav. Kamsa belonged to this demoniac group. He was also an expert diplomat, and so he quickly arranged for his demon friends to kill Krishna and Balaram. So he set about his plans. So he first made the first part of his plans, and now the big question is, the elephant would be there, the wrestlers would be there, and ultimately Kamsa himself will be there to kill Krishna. But then the main question is, how to get Krishna to come from Vrindavan, from Braja, from Sri Vrindavan Dham to Mathura. And for this, he called for Akrura. He then called for Akrura, one of the descendants of the family of Yadu, in which Krishna was born as the son of Vasudev. And when Akrura came to see Kamsa, Kamsa very politely shook hands with him, and he said, now remember that Kamsa is planning to kill Krishna. And he's making one plan after the next. His heart is filled with hate. It's filled with fear. And violence. He's trying to kill this most beautiful boy, Krishna. But yet, he calls for Akrura, who is a descendant of the Yadu dynasty, a relative of Krishna, and actually a devotee of Krishna. Kamsa has driven from Mathura almost all the members of the Yadu dynasty. They're living in caves and forests out of fear of Kamsa, because Kamsa has stolen away the kingdom. He has thrown his father, Ugrasena, in jail, and he was really demonic. But yet he called for Akrura. So a few questions will come up, and he was very, very sweet and very, very polite to Akrura. He held him by his hand, and he shook hands with him and said, my dear Akrura, actually, I have no better friend than you in the Bhoja dynasty, the Bhoja and Yadu dynasties. You are the most munificent person. What does munificent mean?
Charitable.
Charitable, generous. You are so generous. I have no better friend than you. And because you are so generous, and because you are my friend, I'm going to beg from you something in charity. And because you are so good-hearted, you please give this to me. And then he says something very interesting. Listen to this. Actually, and this is Kamsa speaking, who was huge and powerful. He was ferocious. Actually, he said, I have taken shelter of you, exactly as King Indra takes shelter of Lord Vishnu. Now, what's interesting about that statement, about the analogy there? I have taken shelter of you exactly as Indra takes shelter of Vishnu. Yes. So what's interesting about that? Huh? Who knows everything? Kamsa knows everything. Okay, what, first of all, what's the pastime in which Indra takes shelter of Vishnu? Bali Maharaj. Yeah, when Bali Maharaj has captured the kingdom of Indra, so Lord, who is the Vishnu form that comes? Lord Vamandev. So by Vamandev's mercy, then the kingdom is restored to Indra. So Indra takes shelter of Vishnu. So I am taking shelter of you just as Indra takes shelter of Vishnu. So who is more powerful, Kamsa or Akura? But who's actually more powerful? I mean, of course, he's a devotee. Akura is a devotee. But in great strength, one is the king and one is one of the last remaining members of the Yadu dynasty there, because Kamsa's killed and driven away everyone else. Who is the powerful one? It's Kamsa. So in the example, Kamsa says, I am taking shelter of you. The powerful one is taking shelter of a lesser one, just like the powerful one, Indra, is taking shelter of Vishnu, less powerful. So he's insulting Lord Vishnu like that too, in the midst of this. Very consciously, because he has such hatred of Vishnu. He's demonic. I request you, and here's his request, to go immediately to Vrindavan and find the two boys whose names are Krishna and Balaram. They are the sons of Nanda Maharaj. Take this nice chariot, and he points to a beautiful new chariot, especially prepared for the boys, and bring them here immediately. That is my request to you. Now, there's a beautiful new chariot, and Kamsa is thinking that these forest boys, Krishna and Balaram, when they see this new chariot, they're not going to be able to resist getting in it. Just like if someone would come to take you in a new Mercedes or something, you know, with, oh yes, this is wonderful. Finally they realize. Or, but when there's a fancy vehicle, there's more of a tendency to want to go in it. So this is what Kamsa's thinking. I will lure them to come into the chariot and then bring them to Mathura, which is what I want. And then my plan to kill them will unfold. Akura was very intelligent. And he was a devotee, a great devotee. He was a follower of the Vedic principles, and he performed his activities without any attachment. He was very pure. So many questions come up, but they get more complicated when we hear the next part of what's written. But first, about the chariot, well, Kamsa was thinking like that, that I'll lure them with this wonderful chariot. Did you ever go into a very fancy chariot? Fancy car? Would you like to be in a fancy car? Okay. That's just natural. But while Akura was thinking just the opposite, he was thinking that I'm so glad that Kamsa is sending a new chariot, because I wouldn't want to bring Krishna and Balaram on something that has been used by Kamsa, by his remnants. I wouldn't want to let Krishna and Balaram, offer that to Krishna and Balaram. So he was so happy about this. Now why? He's going to accept this. He's going to accept this plan of Kamsa's. And Kamsa's even going, amazingly enough, going to reveal to Akrura exactly what his plan is, to kill Krishna and Balaram. We'll read that next. But why is it that Akrura is going to accept such a terrible part in this plan? He's going to bring them, and to a place that's so, a situation that's so dangerous for them, where the powerful Kamsa is going to kill him. So, in one sense, we don't expect Akrura to go through with this. Maybe he would say yes because he's afraid of his life, but one could think that he would go in the exact opposite direction and hide in the forest or something. But why does he go? Why does he actually go? That's one reason, yeah. He wants to see Krishna. And his journey to Vrindavan to see Krishna is the ideal journey to Vrindavan. Because at every moment he's meditating on Krishna. Oh, when I see Krishna, he's going to be doing this, he's going to be doing that. His form is so beautiful. I'll be able to see Krishna like this. How fortunate as I am. And even though I'm going there as a messenger of Kamsa, Krishna will know the actual intention in my heart. I'm his devotee in the heart of my heart. So I want to please him, even though this and even... But constantly, continuously, he's thinking of Krishna. He's fully absorbed in favorable thoughts of Krishna. The ideal journey to Vrindavan. And then finally, when he sees the footprints of Krishna in the dust of Vrindavan, he rolls in the dust of Vrindavan in ecstasy. This is the ideal journey. And actually Prabhupada will say that when coming to Vrindavan, one should actually do this. But not only just roll in the dust, but be constantly absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. How beautiful Krishna is, how beautiful Balaram is, how beautiful Radhashyama Sundar is, how sweet the room of Srila Prabhupada is, how it is like being in the house of our grandfather. It's just well protected and everything is so nice. And such happiness comes when we come into the temple to see the deities. So that's one reason why he agreed. He wanted to see Krishna, but that's not enough, it seems to me, because that's what he wants, but still, he's going to bring Krishna and Balaram, and Kamsa's going to try and kill them, and he's powerful. So another reason is, and we'll hear this, because Kamsa is so diplomatic. Oh, my dear Akrura, I have no better friend in the world than you. I am taking shelter of you. You are so open-hearted. You will award me my desire. Now just please bring these two boys here to Mathura. Because you send a friend, a relative. He's a senior relative in the family of the Yadus. He's the uncle of Krishna and Balaram. And Akrura also is very diplomatic. He's going to place some honey on his tongue as well. And he's going to speak so sweetly to Kamsa. But inside, he's arranging very consciously for Kamsa's death. Kamsa has his plan And Krishna has his plan, and Akura knows that he's going to be an instrument of Krishna's plan. And rather than Krishna being killed, it is Kamsa who is going to be killed by Krishna. And if he had one trace of doubt in this, because he knew Krishna was the Supreme Lord, but if he had any doubt in this, and he knew about the prophecy that the eighth son of Vasudev and Devaki would kill Krishna, and he knew that Krishna was that son. But if he had any doubt, when they stopped in Akuragat on the way back, Krishna, Balaram, and Akura, and when Akura saw in the Yamuna, and while he was bathing, he saw Krishna in his Vishnu form, and Baladev, Balaram, in his form of Anantashesha, and he saw the universe all there. If he had any doubt who was going to be killed, that doubt was completely removed. So his consciousness was pure. Otherwise, how could he see Krishna in such a devotional way? And thus he had pure consciousness. So this was the plan of Kamsa. But now another question comes, and that question comes up after, and I've asked this question, and today I think I got the answer to it finally. I've been wondering about this for years and years and years. Now, Akura's responses to Kamsa are somewhat understandable, but what does Kamsa now say to Akura? This is my request to you, bring the boys here. Now, my plan is to kill these two boys. As soon as they come in the gate, there will be a giant elephant named Kuvalaya Peter waiting, and possibly he, Krishna, the elephant will be able to kill them. But if somehow or another they escape, they will next meet the wrestlers and will be killed by them. That is my plan. And after killing these two boys, I shall kill Vasudev, and I shall kill Nanda, who are supporters of the Vishnu and Bhoja dynasty. I shall also kill my father, Ugrasena, and his brother, Devaka, because they are actually my enemies, and they are hindrances to my diplomacy and my politics. Thus, I shall get rid of all my enemies. He's telling him everything. Just, you know, sometimes we talk to our devotee friends and we say, Prabhu, I want to reveal my heart to you. Now Kamsa, look what's in his heart. It's like killing everyone. I mean, it's quite extreme. And it's usually this is not considered good politics either, to tell other people your plans in this, especially if they're so extreme. Is this. And it continues. Jarasandha is my father-in-law, a diplomatic marriage to get the allies. This is also done very much in during the Mughal times and the Aurangzeb and all and Akbar. They would marry all the Hindu princesses and make alliances with all the Rajputs. In this way they would make their kingdom really strong. So Kamsa had done that too, and Jarasandha was so powerful, and he was demonic. So he made an alliance with Jarasandha by marrying the two daughters of Jarasandha, whose names were Asti and Prapti. Yes. Jarasandha is my father-in-law, so I will get rid of all my enemies. And Jarasandha is my father-in-law. And I have a great monkey friend named Vidvid, who, interestingly enough, fought on the side of Ram. In the Ramayana, he was ancient, but he was a devotee. But through bad association, he became demonic. There is perhaps a lesson we might learn from that. Keep in good association. And he continues, "So I have my friends, my allies, and with their help, it will be easy to kill all the kings on the surface of the earth who support the demigods. This is my plan." And those kings that he was planning to kill was also the Kurus, Srila Jiva Goswami says, the Pandavas. He wanted to take over. "In this way, I shall be free from all opposition." This is every conditioned soul's plan. I mean, maybe not as extreme as this, but it's very similar in one way or another. I want to remove any obstacle that's in my way. I want to bring closer to me everything that will help me achieve my plans, and I'll be free from all opposition, and it will be very pleasant to rule the world without any obstruction, no obstacles. And here's more. "You may know that Sambara, Narakasura, Banasura are my intimate friends. And when I begin this war against the kings who support the demigods, they will help me considerably." This is the demonic concept of friendship. He who will support me in my plans. And the demonic concept of enemies is anyone who gets in the way of me fulfilling my desires. They are my enemy, and I will kill them. This is straight out of the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And he, Kamsa, was a demon. "Surely I shall be rid of my enemies with a plan like this. But the first part of my plan is that I have to rid the world of Krishna and Balaram. So please, go immediately to Vrindavan and encourage the boys to come here to see the beauty of Mathura and take pleasure in the wrestling competition. We're having a big festival, a Dhanurajagya, and they will be able to see the opulence, Aishwarya of the city of Mathura with its wonderful gates and its decorations, and the bands will be playing, and there'll be as much ghee and everything as anyone can want. Bring Nanda Maharaj there. He even said, bring Nanda, bring everyone for this wonderful festival. So there's one more paragraph, which is Akura's reply, but we'll save that for tomorrow. But what is the question? Why in the world would he tell Akura this? All these terrible plans. He knows that Akura is a Yadu, also a member of the Yadu dynasty. What is the answer to that? Do you know?
What? Because of Akura's diplomacy, he was feeling that he was a friend.
Yeah, he was feeling he was a friend, that's true. But he actually, I trust you completely because of Akura's expert in diplomacy. Well, Akura was actually trying to have him killed. Notice that Narada Muni spoke so sweetly, acted as a friend to Kamsa, but was trying to have him killed. And Akura was speaking so nicely, he will speak nicely, and he's trying to have him killed. This is what happens when you have a big position like that. Everyone speaks very sweetly to you like that, and everyone is trying to remove you. And therefore, these intelligent kings, they knew this. And therefore, they couldn't trust anyone. And there's a nitty that says, the two people that you have to be most careful about in your kingdom, and that you have to trust the most, are your cook and your barber. Because when the barber is shaving you, he can slit your throat. And when the cook is cooking for you, he can poison you. So what a life these impious rulers have. They don't have, like Bali Maharaj knew this. He had the piety by the mercy of Sukracharya to gain the kingdom, but he knew he didn't have the piety to maintain it. You need so much sattva, punya, to maintain what you have. So therefore, Bali Maharaj had to perform continuous yajnas to maintain the kingdom. And the only way to get him out was by a plan, when he would offend his spiritual master and he would be cursed. So all these impious rulers, today as in the past, they're always so fearful because everyone in front of them is smiling so sweetly and saying, "Yes, Maharaj, yes, Maharaj, you are the greatest, you are this." But everyone is envious. This is Kali Yuga. Someone's calling to say that it's time for the end of class. So that question, but that's not the only answer. There is also a wonderful answer that I read today, and I will tell you tomorrow, Krishna willing, of why he spoke like this so directly. Are you surprised that he spoke so directly with his plan?
Yes.
Yes, are you surprised? Yes. Okay. Kal, Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Krishna ki jai, Sri Krishna's Leela ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Vrindavandam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada Bhaktivinoda ki jai.